Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly number 8 for September 26, 2006. Wax on, wax off. Welcome to Mac Break Weekly. I'm Leo Laporte. With me, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core, back from Detroit, the Motor City.
Hello.
Hey, Alex. Welcome back. We missed you.
How's it going?
From PodcastingTricks.com and the iLife Zone and Tricks and TricksAreForKids.com. Scott Bourne.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Scott. And Merlin Mann of 43folders.com. And we were just measuring earlier. We all had it whipped out, and we were saying who had the most traffic and hits, but I gotta say I'm pretty impressed with, what did you say, 1.5 million?
No, that's crazy talk. You lumber way out lengths and circumferences of mine. I got nothing here.
No, it's interesting because and it's actually apropos to what we'll be talking about today. But you know, as Podcast Expo comes up this week, a lot of people talk about numbers, a lot of numbers are thrown around, and I'm of the opinion that these things are all worthless. We don't know anything. We have
no
idea.
Absolutely right. It's a cargo cult. There's absolutely no way to figure this stuff out.
So the big story of the week, at least for podcasters, I don't know how much of a story it is for podcast listeners, less so for people who don't listen to podcasts. We presume that those of you listening are not in that category. Apple sending a cease and desist order to a company called Podcast Ready. Podcast Ready makes a podcast client called MyPodder. Now, I could see maybe Apple would not like the name MyPodder since it sounds like iPod. But apparently, in this cease and desist letter, they even were going after Podcast Ready. Scott, you made some calls. What is really going on?
I did a lot of research on this yesterday, Leo. First of all, Apple has made no attempt to trademark the word podcast that I can guarantee that is legitimate. I
know iPodcast, they did try to trademark.
Yeah, but podcast, they haven't. They don't own it. In fact, according to the trademark search, which I paid my hard-earned money for yesterday, nobody has it. And that's number one. Number two, a lot of people don't understand trademark law, and it's easy to get mad at Apple because they have, you know, they have a reputation for being heavy-handed here and there. But when you have a trademark, I own a few myself, you have to defend it by law or else you can lose it. So some of what they were doing was simply what they have to do by law. Some of it was mischaracterization by some of the people reporting on this, thinking that they were going after the word podcast. We've looked at what the documents say. They don't appear to be going after the word podcast. If they were to go after the word podcast, all the lawyers I spoke with yesterday think that the United States Trademark and Patent Office wouldn't give them the trademark. And there's quite a bit of legal wrangling that could be done if they decided to head down that road. Now, I know you like the word, netcast.
Yeah, we could talk about that. But you know, it is in the dictionary. It's kind of hard to try to trademark a word that is now accepted by Merriam-Webster as just a generic word, right?
And that's part of their legal problem. There is some of the legal doctrines that govern this say that when a word is, you know, commonly used to describe things like that, it's very tough to get.
Nevertheless, they are, and they, as you pointed out, have to go after people who infringe on their iPod trademark.
Yes, they have to do that or else they could lose it. Now, you know, sometimes they go a little overboard, in my opinion. They have the discretion to decide who's really a threat and who isn't. Now, there is some interesting case law that these attorneys provided to me that I really thought kind of might buoy up the podcasting community in the event that Apple were to start throwing its weight around. And I'm not saying that they are, but if they were, there's actually laws that protect smaller companies from bigger companies just doing that thing. And so, you know, if Apple were to threaten somebody, you
kind
know,
slap, a slap law of some kind that would
Yeah, they could actually find themselves on the wrong end of that judge's gavel.
And, you know, people accused me because I did put a post up saying, well, let's just call it Netcast. People accused me of being a coward saying, fight Apple. But that's not the point. It's not about whether you're going to fight Apple or not. To me,
well, I think that actually it brings up this issue that I think you're having to some degree, and I know that we're having, is, for instance, the full version of Mac Break isn't even compatible with an iPod. You know, so why are we calling it a podcast at all? You know, and I think that more than anything else, this kind of brings up, should we be calling it a podcast? Should we be, you know, because a lot of the stuff, even a lot of the stuff that Apple's now putting out, whether it's movies or whatever, may not be able to be put on an iPod. Maybe that's not the end goal for a lot of the future of content, you know, video content anyway. And it can be played on so many different places. Why are we calling it, you know, only after one of them?
It does seem to confuse people. I mean, I talk to people all the time who say, oh, but I don't have an iPod. I'd love to listen to your show, but I don't have an iPod.
Right.
That's of course. Why can't we just call them?
Who are those people?
Well, it is a show, but I think it's a show is so generic. It's nice to indicate somehow that this show comes in over the internet, is, you know, available on demand on a variety of devices, not just an iPod, but a computer, a cell phone, a, you know, CD-ROM. A lot of people listen on CD-ROM. They burn it to CD-ROM.
Well, part of the problem is the same problem as you have with weblogs, where, you know, like any kind of a movement like this, for the longest time, you can kind of slap everything with the same label because they all represent the same kind of change from whatever came before them. And for, you know, this always happens this way. You can look at, I've mentioned before, you know, you always kind of base your idea of something on the technology that it's, you know, attempting to replace. And so, you know, everybody thinks of podcasts as being like radios. And, you know, in the 50s, they thought everything in the future was going to look like TVs.
Right.
And so, you know, I think there's something to be said for coming up with a better title for this. It's a shame that the conversation has to happen at the same time as Apple is fighting this first world problem they've got.
Well, I don't really blame Apple. I mean, I think, Scott, you're right. They're just defending their trademark. I don't think they have any goal of and would be stupid if they did. I mean, they've gotten just as podcasting has benefited from the association with Apple and the iPod. They've benefited in reverse. And certainly it'd be a lot of bad publicity if they were to come after a bunch of independent broadcasters who have no money.
Well, the other thing is there's a lot of these words that people are suggesting as alternatives are already trademarked.
Yeah, Netcast is okay. CBS is using it for their – in fact, interestingly, has been for a while using it instead of the word podcast. And Netcast is a sufficiently generic word that I think it's even more generic than podcasting. So I think you're probably all right with Netcast.
I think it's an interesting opportunity though, because just to follow up on that blog point. I mean, there was a point when, you know, Rebecca Blood, Jason Kotke, Ev, like whoever, all these people kind of had, you know, these personal kind of journals, and we all called them blogs. Well, today, you know, is the Daily Kos the same thing as Boing Boing? Is the same thing as Ariana Huffington?
Right. Right. Very different.
So these are all, I mean, there's been a lot. We're getting to the point where the word weblog is becoming less and less meaningful, as if that were possible.
We've outgrown it, though, right? I mean, we don't need it anymore.
But you've nailed it exactly, which is, so the joke I always made, I used to say that, you know, a weblog is basically a homepage in a tuxedo t-shirt. And to me, a podcast for a long time was an MP3 radio show to most people. So I think there is value in being clearer about what, you know, so what it is we're talking, what are we talking about? There's a big difference between the kind of stuff Alex makes with interactive video versus, you know, some kid, you know,
I've never been comfortable calling a video cast a podcast. That doesn't seem right at all. And vidcast works for me, or I mean, but I don't know.
I don't like the sound of it, but outside of that.
I mean, like Oddcast either, and some people have suggested that for podcasts.
You know, I think that what I'm also looking at is that when I think of blogs, you know, I have to admit that to me, they don't, you know, for the most part, the word blogs, there are certain blogs that I actually, you know, go and look at a lot, but I don't think of it the same as like CNN, you know, CNN.com or whatever. And I think that it's important for us to start distinguishing ourselves. I think in the same way podcast has that kind of smaller feel to it, that is homier and fun and more fun. But if you're trying to make a business out of it, I think moving past that, I think, is really important.
Now, look, this is a little incestuous. I don't think our audience really cares. We're spending a lot of time on it. I think as podcasters, we care. And certainly we're going to talk about it at Podcast Expo this week. I'm going to raise it, obviously, in my speech. I don't care if it's Netcast. I'm, you know, for my purposes, I could call it a Twitcast. For your purposes, you could call it a Pixelcast. I mean, you know, the name is not that important. But I think it is an opportunity to have this discussion, which I think is a good thing, which is podcast the right name? Have we outgrown it? It's early. We're not as mature as blogs. Maybe we don't need a uniform. Do you think, Merlin, we just don't even need a name for all of these things?
Well, I don't know. I mean, these kinds of things, like you say, they mature in time. But I kind of like the idea of, well, I mean, the obvious thing is let's maybe get away from the word cast. You know, obviously that's had some resonance because of broadcasting and then podcasting, and it rhymes, which people like. But I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm terrible at naming this kind of stuff. But I think I agree with you, though. I think it's a good time to have this conversation. And to Alex's point, I mean, there's absolutely, I mean, you know, Nick Denton and some kid with a Blogspot account are, you know, There's a whole lot of difference going on there on all kinds of levels. And calling those both blogs at a certain point, you know, obviously becomes less meaningful.
As podcasters and podcast listeners, I think we do have a reasonable issue, which is nobody, you know, the majority of the world does not yet know about podcasting. I want them to know about podcasting. As listeners, I think you should want them to know about podcasting, because the more this gains traction, the more they'll be, the quality will improve. It becomes a more important medium. Just as people who read blogs have a vested interest in blogging succeeding, I think listeners have an interest in podcasts succeeding. And I think that, you know, maybe the word isn't serving us very well anymore. You had some opinions, Scott, about this. What should we call it? You've been in broadcasting a long time.
Yeah, I actually kind of like your word, to tell you the truth. Somebody suggested audiocast, but I'm actually part of a, I was
too many
part of
syllables.
A group. Well, and I was part of a group that owns the trademark to that word, so you're going to have to talk to me if you want to use
fight
that.
Scott. Well, and you had Net Radio, so Net's a name you like.
Yeah, Net Radio is a trademark that I originally made, and I don't own the company anymore, and so I don't have to worry about that. But yeah, I like Netcast a lot, and I got to tell you, I think, frankly, with you having the juice you do, Leo, if you decide it's Netcast, a lot of us will follow.
Well, I don't want to be Don Quixote here either. I mean,
well, you're not chasing any windmills. You're just naming a podcast.
No, I'm going to go over that hill. You all follow me now. Hey,
so now you're now going to be the father of Netcasting.
Oh, that's good. All right.
See, we got a pod father. Now we need a net father.
I have. But I did rename all the. I'll change all my signage on the site just for fun to Netcast. It's easy enough to do. And we still have the Twit Sounder, which says podcast you love. But I've asked Jim Cutler, who cut that originally, to change it to Netcast. So, you know, I mean, just for fun. I don't think it really matters that much. I'm not trying to create a movement here.
Famous last words.
No, I mean, I have nothing to gain by that, and I'm perfectly willing for two things to happen. Three things to happen. One, we don't change it all. It's podcasting. I think that's the most likely outcome. Two, we do decide on a new name, whatever it is. That's fine. I'll go along with it. It doesn't have to be Netcast. Three, maybe just as likely, it fragments, and there are, because it's really, you're right, Alex. What you do is not a podcast. I mean, Mac Break is not a podcast. Should it be called one?
Well, and I think it's going to be important for us, especially as we do more shows like Mac Break and more things that are like that, to start distinguishing ourselves from everything else that's floating around, or for business reasons. You know?
And so my problem with part of this is that with all of these sorts of distinctions in the early days, it's so heavily based on the least important part of it, which is the way that it's delivered. Maybe it's not the least important part.
No, but
for
you're
example,
right. You're right. It does focus on that.
Like every week I download Inside the Media 2 days before it's broadcast in San Francisco. So I listen to the podcast of Inside the Media, which is identical except for the intro. I get Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac every a few hours before it's on the radio.
Well, is TiVo TV?
Podcasts?
Well, is TiVo TV? Is IPTV TV? Is it useful to make the distinction? I think right now, in the early days, it is useful, because that tells the consumer who's interested where to go.
It could be, but I mean, this is a terrible rat hole to go down. But I mean, I'm with you though on the point about having it cleft so closely to the iPod. I mean, you know, I think that was a mistake,
and everybody knew it was a mistake the day it happened. I mean, but we were stuck with it.
I want to jump in here because I want to do something I know Leo won't. And that is, I want to announce that our friend Leo is the podcaster of the year.
Netcaster, please.
And that's what I was just going to say, where this becomes relevant is that if you were to win this award again next year, Leo, they would have to change the name for you. But I want to congratulate you on winning, and I do think you're a thought leader in this space, and I think it's important that we have the conversation, but I also think you're right. We've probably talked about it enough.
Yeah, and I really want to make clear that I'm not trying to impose Netcast by any means. I don't believe I have, or anyone has, the clout to do that. But if we can reach a consensus, that'd be great.
I vote for it.
LeoCast.
LeoCast. Hey,
yeah, that's it. LeoCast. Forget all this podcast.
No ego there, is there?
Thank you for listening to the LeoCast.
It's a LeoCast. Who is this Leo, and why is it called LeoCast?
Why is he casting?
Well, let's talk about something that's in Scott Bourne's backyard. Aperture 1.5. I guess I was wrong proclaiming it dead 2 weeks ago.
Oh, we're not getting off nearly that easy. I want you groveling,
they
son.
They fired everybody, didn't they?
You were out here proclaiming gloom and doom, and I've just waiting for this moment. I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And you are absolutely going to get it. No, it's 1.5. It's great news. Obviously, Aperture's not dead. And, man, first of all, it's a free upgrade, and it's really equivalent of almost a 2.0 upgrade.
Really?
So that's the best news. Yeah, it's unbelievable. They did away with all the things that made people upset. You no longer have to manage a controlled library in one space. A lot of people didn't like that. I think it's fine, but people didn't care for it, so that's gone. You can now look at offline media. That's something you couldn't do before. They've speeded up everything, and it will run, get this, on any Intel Mac now, even a MacBook, even a Mini. It'll run on a Mini, yeah.
So before, it didn't have thumbnails, so you couldn't look at stuff that was offline, but now...
It did have thumbnails, but you had to have the library open and accessible to see them. Now you can store those pictures on a DVD anywhere you want.
That's pretty critical, isn't it? I mean, you've got to be able to do
that. It is for people that do a lot of work. It is critical. You can now have offline media. The library still shows you a thumbnail, and what's cool is you can even make your edits to the thumbnail.
Wow.
And then when you actually bring the library online, it'll render it.
Well, does this kill Lightroom then?
Well, keep in mind, Lightroom is just a beta. Lightroom, interestingly enough, the day before revved out beta 4. And, you know, Lightroom has always been a couple of steps behind Aperture, in my opinion. Aperture is a mature application. We can count on it. Lightroom, they're putting out disclaimers that say, hey, don't count on this thing yet because we may change everything. I think it's just way too early to pass on Lightroom. I'm glad it's out there because I think that the more people in the space, the better photographers are. And all these programs run on Macs, so that's good news for our audience that are into Macs. But I'll tell you, if you're a serious photographer, Aperture is something that's definitely worth a look. And I'm not just saying that because, you know,
you run aperturetricks.com.
I'm not, because I started running aperturetricks.com the day the program was released. Yeah. Because I decided it was a good piece.
You've been a
of software
fan from day one.
I well, have.
Can I have some Tabasco sauce with my crow, or do I have to eat it straight?
No, you're fine. I'm through beating you up now. I just wanted to get it in there.
One of the things I think is actually pretty cool also is the plugin architecture. So there's an API now for companies like iStock Photo, and they've already iStock Photo, I believe Getty and a couple other of the services will, you know, have it set up so you can tag all of your stuff while you're sitting in Aperture and then export that stuff out. And this is it's something that really makes it easier. I'm just starting to get into putting stuff up on iStock Photo. So, actually I'm doing some video stuff for their video side, but being able to tag all that stuff, it's just a pain in the neck, and being able to do that while you're working and be able to pass all that stuff on, I think is more than a small improvement, you know, to the situation. And it's exciting to see Apple release APIs ever, because it's always like pulling teeth to get them to
let us
actually play.
It was a big bone of contention, Alex. Early on, we had Joe Shore, the Aperture project lead, with us when Derek Story and I taught it at Macworld. Mm-hmm. And he told me, he said, about half the company doesn't want it, half does. There's always that battle inside Apple over whether or not to open up anything.
And
the fact that we do have that API, as limited as it is, it's mostly an export API. We still can't get functionality in terms of new plugins to do filters and such, but at least we're down that road. And they launched with like 6 or 7 companies already taking advantage of it. So that's really interesting.
iStock Photo, Pictage, Flickr, Connected Flow. That's quite a few. I mean, that's kind of neat, actually.
Yeah, and it just allows you to integrate with those things much more seamlessly. And the thing I just want to point out, this is a frustrating part of Apple that I think that Apple, I'm hoping somebody at Apple is actually listening to this, that it really, I think, slows down the adoption of a lot of their software when they don't make it easy for people to develop extra stuff for it.
I think they've got to know that. I'm surprised that there's dissension internally. That's just obvious.
But it's there's not really, for a long time, there wasn't any way to build anything for iMovie. There wasn't any way to build.
Well, I can see if there are technical reasons, it's a difficult thing to do. I don't understand in this day and age how anybody could have a philosophical position that that's a bad idea.
No, they just don't want to do it because they don't want to be locked down to having, they don't want to be locked down to an infrastructure. They want to be able to change the infrastructure as they want to without having developers upset. But even I have to say, as DV Garage, we are developers. We actually sell products and we don't mind changing the stuff. We just would like to have more, have that stuff deeper. And it's been.
But you look at what the companies now in the Web 2.0 space like Google have done by giving an API, by creating an API. It's just so powerful. I don't know why somebody would, in this day and age, say, well, what a bad idea that is.
And Apple's getting better. Apple's getting better. The FX plug was an exciting plugin that was only available in Motion, and now whenever Final Cut Pro 5.1.2 comes out, you'll be able to have FX plugs working within Final Cut Pro, which will be it's really exciting for us, but it'll also be exciting for a lot of plugin developers because it's a 500,000 user market that is going to open up and be a much more robust format. So they're doing a little bit of it, but I think that Apple doesn't go nearly as far as they need to one of the ways that things get locked in to systems that people start using them is because of all those additions, because of all that stuff. Your team can only be so big building the core app. And that's what made Photoshop such a big deal is all those plugins, and being able to get them. That's one of the reasons that it became part of that standard was because of that plugin architecture. And so I think that Apple, anyway, I'm just, that's something that I think is a very weak point in Apple. They're getting better at it, and this is a start in Aperture, but they really need to give us more control. Let us build more stuff for Aperture. Anyway.
I got an email from a listener to the show, Ulf, who lives in Malmo, Sweden. He is a fan of Mac Break Weekly. We were talking about the iPhone once or twice or three, four, five, six times.
I want my iPhone.
I know. He says, I just want to point out the situation in the U.S. regarding cell phones is peculiar. In the rest of the world, it's very different. He said the tying between handsets and operators is less common in Europe. Here you buy a mobile phone, any phone you want. Then you buy a SIM card from a network, and you put it in your phone, and boom, you're on that network. So the phone is not linked to the network as it is here in the States, which means, I would imagine, I don't know, that they pay more for their phones. I mean, the phone price is heavily subsidized in the U.S. because you're tied to a carrier. It's selling you the razor because you're going to be buying the blades for the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. He says, and this is the thing that I think is interesting. I've heard from authoritative sources that Apple has been shopping around for a cell phone operating system. And that would be the case if they were going to make an iPhone. They would need an OS with some very specific. And that's what they did with the iPod, didn't they? They went out and bought an operating system or rented an operating system.
Well, the rumor sites are saying that they just made a deal with Singular to open up the first 6 months of iPhone service on Singular exclusively.
As an MVNO or?
No details on the extent of that relationship because it came off of one of the rumor sites.
Right.
So, we don't know if it's true or not.
Right.
But it is interesting that we're hearing conversations of this nature as if it's just a given we're going to have the phone. Now we're talking about who's going to be the provider.
And I think that what I'm hoping is that Apple's going to do some kind of hybrid where if we're in a Wi-Fi network, for instance, we can use iChat and, or Skype or, some kind of, or VoIP or whatever. And then if we don't have that, we can move back and forth. I mean, I'm hoping that given the technology and how far along it is, we could, they're going to give us that kind of, and it may not be in the first version, but I think that has to be the next step of the process.
Well, we talked previously about how, and to some extent, the success of the iPod is it must be owed to iTunes, right, and the iTunes store. So in the scenario of having an Apple phone, what app is the equivalent of iTunes, do you think, or does there need to be one?
Well, I think it's still going to be iTunes. I mean, I think we're going to use it as an iPod that we can make phone calls on.
Everybody points out, whenever we talk about this, they say, well, wait a minute, isn't the rocker an iPhone? I mean, how is it different? Well, merely the iTunes capability is not. I mean, you can get a phone with that. We're talking about a lot more than that.
Well, and the rocker is also, it's limited to 100, arbitrarily.
Is that Motorola?
Limited to 100.
Yeah,
the Motorola.
The first iTunes phone.
It's arbitrarily limited to 100 songs. It is, there's a lot of limitations to it, which Apple, of course, if they're going to do it, they're not going to put up with.
Well, I think what you want, and I imagine is what everybody's thinking, is take your iPod video, put an antenna on it and a microphone on it, and there's a phone.
Right.
And maybe you have a pad appear from somewhere, but a number pad. But, I mean, that's what you want is an iPod with phone capabilities, right? You're not talking about a phone that can play 100 songs.
Right, exactly. I mean, you want you want an iPod with a phone that, that interrupts your music if you're getting a call or if you wanted to.
The rocker does.
I never do, but
Sliver and rocker do that.
But then the other things, of course. I mean, I think that being able to incorporate Wi-Fi. I mean, the Sony now has this little Milo that just came out.
Right.
And we were playing with it at the Sony store, and it's pretty nifty. I mean, it's a pretty cool.
What is it? What's the Milo?
The Milo is it's for, I think it's mostly for teenagers. I mean, the way it looks and feels. But it's got a full keyboard. You know, it's like a flip up, so it flips up, and you can message, do instant messaging. It also has, but it takes Wi-Fi, so you can do VoIP over Wi-Fi if you are in a zone. Now, we were in the Metreon, and it was really slow, so we couldn't really tell whether that worked. And you can also surf the web, and you can, do a whole bunch of little things with it.
It sounds like the, in some ways, the iPhone.
It's definitely that going down that path. It doesn't do, any kind of cell. It, right. it only does VoIP.
It's
doesn't
kind of clunky
have
a, looking. I don't think it's very attractive. Just the pictures I've seen. How did it look in real life?
It was cool. It felt the thing is that it felt lightweight. It just felt like I'd break.
Cheap.
I felt like I was going to break at any moment. And it was sitting right next to that full screen, that little miniature Vio, which looked way cooler. So anyway, I think that going that kind of direction, but more with an Apple, solidness and the full iPod and everything else and GPS. I mean, GPS, I think, has to get put into a lot of the stuff in the near future. And so,
I'm sorry, that was the little Milo guy talking.
Glad you can make it.
You can't hear him.
I want to introduce you to something really, really cool. Check it out.
He sounds like Merlin. He actually looks like Merlin. Did you do this commercial?
Milo's not what you think it is. In fact, it isn't like anything you've ever seen before. For people like you and me, Milo is a total revolution.
Oh, where's my shotgun? I just want to kill this guy. I just want to kill this guy. Don't you?
You're riveting. Yeah.
Oh. It's not what you think it is. It's a total revolution.
Anytime somebody says total revolution, I immediately go.
Yeah. I'll get your revolution up against the wall. Jeez.
You just gave that guy big time airtime.
It's a paradigm shift. A meeting of synergies.
I bet his name is Milo. No, actually. it's interesting because what you have is a perfect example of a big corporation pretending to somehow understand kids and failing miserably. The guy looked like he was 43. It just doesn't.
I mean, I don't want to beat a dead horse because we covered this pretty well last time. But so, I've been testing these Sprint phones that are supposedly multimedia and they're supposedly music players. And God bless them. I appreciate, having the phone to play with. But they're just like the ultimate kind of like a rack stereo you'd buy at Walgreens.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the worst of all worlds.
Nobody loves their phone yet. Does anybody love their phone?
Is there a
lovable phone?
Really? But I mean, here's the thing is we talked last time about what our wish list items would be for what really constitutes an Apple phone. And I don't know, maybe I'm just, an unrehabilitated fanboy, but I have to imagine that there's going to be something more to this than an iPod with a Snap-on because Trios, have done that before.
Snap-on or strap-on?
I didn't want to say that.
I did not
want to say that.
I don't know where your mind goes.
Banana.
No, that's the old safe word.
but for example, that having some kind of a Wi-Fi integration would be great. I mean, at this point, we're just speculating wildly. But I look at stuff like an app that I'm really starting to warm up to is Addressbook, oddly enough, and discovering that the more spotlight starts exposing itself in different parts of the OS, the more powerful Addressbook starts to become. And I know this sounds a little loopy, but think about, I don't know how much you guys use this, but the ability to go in and create smart groups, or for that matter, ad hoc manual groups, then gives you a lot of control back in mail.app for how you can handle things. I don't know. I just think it's interesting to think about, iTunes and a phone, apart from the music integration and having this program called iTunes, I'm not sure I see the match.
I have a lot of that functionality now. I have a pair of Bluetooth headphones called the iCombi. It has a little plug-in that goes into the iPod. It pairs with the iPod. You listen to the iPod. They're pretty good headphones. The iPod's in your backpack. When my phone rings, it's also paired to that. I pick up the phone. It pauses the iPod.
Wow.
I talk on the phone. It's the same headset. It's got a built-in microphone. You don't see it. It just looks like headphones. I press another button. I hang up the phone, and I'm back to the music. I mean, if that's all you want, that's doable. I agree with you, Merlin. Well, it's got to be something a little bit slicker than that.
It's got to be something. There's got to be. I guess I'm just looking for what the zip is back on the Macintosh. Like, it's one thing to create a great device that feels good in your hand and is better to use than, you know.
I'll tell you one thing. If it's synced with the frickin' Macintosh, that would be a big plus.
My biggest problem is, you know, one of my friends of mine, we both have Trio 650s, and we both have decided that we hate our Trio 650 with a passion. We just hate every other phone more than the 650, you know, but the biggest problem that I have is every time I sync, I end up with a whole bunch of new addresses. I got like six Leos,
yeah.
You know,
I've avoided that completely so far. I've got a 700P and I've used missing sync and I haven't had a single problem.
You know, I think it's hit or miss. I just think you're lucky, but I think in general syncing, you're sunk. It's very hard to do, not to
drive it into the ground, but I mean, then also, like, how does this feed into these other pieces? Like, this is the part that gets so interesting for me, is how these little pieces fit together. And as we said before, Leo, like, to me, I'm not that interested in going one place to do one thing. What I'm interested in is applications that provide functional spackle one to another. And so thinking about how this then fits in with the Mac syncing and stuff like that, this starts to get really interesting. You know, that to me, that's kind of where to watch, is like, it's interesting to watch where the applications seem to be headed and then kind of try to figure out, you can kind of mentally reverse engineer what might flow out of that. So it'll be interesting to see, like in Leopard in particular, what kind of stuff starts popping up.
And by the way, I hope that someone in Apple is like playing with the Nokia N95.
That is a neat phone.
No,
that's the only one that, like, if Apple, I'm threatening Apple right now. Here comes the big threat. If I don't get
they respond
iPhone,
so well to threats.
They do. They do fine. If I don't get my iPhone by January 12th. I'm going to go buy a Nokia N95.
What are you going to do, throw your palm at him?
90 or 95?
The 95.
I haven't seen the 95. I've seen the 90, which is
GPS.
Basically, the 90 looks kind of like a camcorder. Is this the same form factor?
Well, this one looks like a little square phone. I mean, it almost looks like a little iPod. It's got an LCD front.
Okay.
It's got an LCD front. It's got full GPS functionality. So it's like a TomTom built right into it.
Oh, here we go with the TomTom again.
I love my TomTom.
I love GPS integration.
I love my TomTom. Well, and I have to say that I'm very interested in GPS because I think there's huge business opportunities for building.
I don't know where you're seeing
that.
The 95 pictures.
Just do a Google image search on Nokia.
I mean, they're so-called leaked pictures. I mean, is this actually?
No. It's on a Nokia site.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. But it is a 5-megapixel camera, support for high speed networks. It's tasty. So anyway, that's for me. I'm just kind of waiting. As I said, I'm waiting. I don't want to scare anyone at Apple. But if I don't get my iPhone,
anyone at Apple. Well, by the way,
yeah, I know, because I know that when I start talking, everyone's really
terrified.
This is the fifth time we've talked about this, guys.
Anyway,
you think they've gotten the word yet?
No.
I don't think anyone there is listening. So, has anyone actually downloaded one of these movies? By the way,
I did. I downloaded Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Did how long did it take you?
It's let me just check how big it is. I think it's 1.5 megabyte, gigabytes.
An hour
I'm
to
sorry.
Download and 3 minutes to realize it was a terrible movie.
No, I love that. You don't love that? No, come on. That's a great movie. Come on.
I fell asleep after 20 minutes. I love that movie.
Oh, no, that's a great movie. But anyway,
I walked out of that movie.
What?
The movie.
Oh, no. You probably didn't like Buckaroo Banzai either. Merlin, help me out
here.
I did
like Buckaroo Banzai. I love Buckaroo Banzai.
Now, so how long did it take? How long did it take to?
Well, I can't give you an accurate number, and I'll tell you why. For most of the day, I bought the second season of Lost. I wanted to see what TV looked like, and I bought Zissou, the hated Life Aquatic, and for half a day, it kept rejecting me. It said, "Sorry, can't get it." They're having server issues, big time server issues.
Man.
When it came, it came probably within half an hour. It took all day to get it to that point. So,
right, I downloaded it.
You got to do it in the background. Nobody's sitting there.
You got to do it at night.
Yeah, nobody's sitting there waiting.
But this is a really good point. At least, you know, based on my, you know, half-assed theory about the ability to have stuff as quickly as you want it. I mean, it's one thing to be able to get, you know, The Night Chicago Died off of BitTorrent in 3 minutes, and it's another thing, you know.
Well, I could get a better quality copy of The Life Aquatic easily from a lot of places, or just add it to
That's
Netflix.
Right.
I guess the question is, so you're right. So it's not that it's faster. It's legal. The quality's not very good. And I have to say the quality on TV shows has improved, but the movies, because of the widescreen, we're really seeing like 270 lines. It's not
very
good.
I think one of the other issues with the widescreen version is that, I downloaded Enemy of the State, so I was I was watching it. And
oh, that's a much better movie.
It's very me. So anyway,
Bill Murray, Will Smith.
It's not Bill Murray and Will Smith.
It's Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman.
Isn't Will Smith in The Enemy of the State?
No.
Yes,
I love Gene Hackman. No, you're right. He's more the
Okay. So anyway, but what's interesting is when you play a DVD, I believe it actually down. You know, when it jumps into DVD. It's down-resing you to the lower resolution so that you get kind of a, you know, so it looks better. When you're using iTunes, I believe that it's just kind of, you know, it really just stretches it out and you really see this pixel doubling.
Oh, okay. Because I've just watched it. So you were able to burn it to a DVD?
No. I'm just saying that I did not burn it to a DVD. I was just watching on iTunes.
You can't.
What I'm saying is when I watch a DVD that theoretically should be roughly the same resolution.
Oh, it's not though. No.
But it's clearly
there's
not
more compression
clear.
As well. I mean, a DVD movie is 4 gigabytes. This is less than 2.
Right, but it's not the compression that's the problem though. When you look at it, it's stair stepping along small. It's stair stepping along small lines that you don't normally see as badly. At least I don't notice them as much.
Let me get this straight. It costs about the same as a real DVD. Doesn't have all the extra bonus stuff. You have to wait maybe a day for it to download, and that's a good thing. And it's not quite as good as we would get off of our DVD.
Waiter, have another piece of crow, please. I have some salsa with that. Thank you.
Enjoy my DVD player again tonight disc in there.
All right, on this big 50-inch screen. I have to say that I'm playing it back on the Apple 30, so it's playing it back on a pretty big screen. Lost looks good, though. I mean, the TV shows, the 4x3 TV shows are appreciably better. I mean, I have the first season of Lost, too. There's an order of magnitude improvement in the new ones. It's still not as good as it would be on a DVD, but it's tolerable. Whereas the movie was noticeably not as good. I mean, it looked blurry.
And all this stuff is good news because, like I say, 2 to 5 years from now, it'll mean something.
What do you mean? To whom?
I mean, 2 to 5 years from now, when we've had the 5th, 6th, 7th generation, and each iteration is successively better, then it'll be cool.
Right. No, I think you're right. But
Just like you said, the TV is already better, and I concur. So, you know, 5 generations from now, the TV will be stellar.
Now, did you guys see this this thing on Amazon? You know, on Amazon's Unbox, Cory Doctorow put this up. I guess this was a little while ago.
But he's a DRM bigot. If you say DRM, he's gonna start frothing at the mouth. I agree with him, but I mean, I'm just saying. Of course, he hates it.
No. I mean, it's fine to have that stuff.
He's not comparing it to Apple, though. I mean, he's just talking about it as it is. Yes.
No. Yeah, and I think that it's just that it's you're nearly. I don't understand how I could buy. And maybe he just made a good case for me, and I have to go back and actually try.
Well, Corey, there's no one better at making the case against copy protection.
Well, I don't mind, and the thing is I don't mind copy protection the way it's put out in iTunes, but like. The agreement that you're signing into in Unbox is basically, you know, if you don't keep on upgrading, you can't play. We could just turn off your video. You know, I mean, you have to keep on upgrading to the newest version. You know, and I think that
you
this gets
own,
back.
Basically,
into,
you don't. His point is, you don't own it. You're buying
you really
something,
like
but
you
don't own it. Yeah. Because ultimately, they can reach their long arm out and take it out of your computer.
Right, and that I think that that's a little. That's a little odd.
I think once people realize it, the real issue is, do people know that or do they care?
How does that differ from – I'm not familiar with Apple's TOS, but how does that differ from what Apple lets you do?
Unless I'm mistaken, we just
got an iTunes update that required a QuickTime upgrade in order to be able to view our old movies.
But it didn't – it's not related to the – I mean you could still – if you didn't upgrade, you would still be able to watch all of your old stuff. So you'd still be able to watch, you know, all the stuff you've already bought off of iTunes. Yeah, you'd still be able to watch it if you didn't upgrade to iTunes. So, I mean,
No, but you have to get a QuickTime upgrade, too.
There's no.
No, that would be only if you want to watch the new stuff.
Well, that's because.
Okay.
But there's still no guarantee, though. I mean, at some point, Apple could release a version of QuickTime.
I don't know. I just feel like every time I sit down and actually read the TOS for anything, like I have to put a damp cloth on my head. You know.
Yeah. You don't own your software. You don't own your operating. You don't own any of this stuff.
Yeah. You own the plastic disc and the right to use it for a little while.
And admittedly, I mean, one of the things you always have to do. I mean, to take this with a grain of salt is that we have release forms and stuff when people join the Pixel Core and all the stuff, and they are very heavy-handed, because we're never going to PR-wise, we could never actually really push that as hard as the agreement. But what you don't want to do is leave a lot of oxygen, And so a lot of this stuff is not leaving any oxygen. Obviously, if they really turned everybody's movies off because they didn't do that, or they did some of these things, I think people would really stop using them. Completely, yep. It would be suicide. So
the lawyers always say we're writing for the divorce, not the marriage.
Right, right.
That's good.
That's why I don't have a prenup. My wife would take the anybody get a new Core 2 Duo iMac, the 20-inch? Apparently, according to Mac Rumors, they've got an 802.11n card in there. Unfortunately, it's the wrong end. It's the Broadcom chip, which is the one everybody hates. But they are putting.
Why do they hate it?
Well, there's the best according to Dvorak and others who know, the best N implementation is from Ergo. They own patents on the MIMO, the real MIMO technology. Broadcom, in fact, is the one that has been causing problems with the ratification. They're the ones who've changed it, Ergo is now saying that the new draft N causes all sorts of interference. Broadcom saying, "Oh, we can fix that. We can fix that." It really isn't the chipset I would put in there. We have Broadcoms in our B and our G Max, but Ergo makes the best N.
Interesting.
According to experts.
Well, we'll see. I guess because they're not advertising it, they don't actually have to commit to it if it doesn't work well.
And presumably, when you get your ITV, it automatically works with these new iMacs, right? As an N device.
It sounds
I bet
like
you that's
the
what
plan.
They're up to. Yeah, I bet yeah, you that's the what plan. They're up to. Yeah.
You have to get kind of get ahead of it.
Right. Couple of follow-ups from previous episodes. I don't know if I should give his name. A fellow who used to work at Apple in the iTunes Music Store support said, in fact, the way Apple does it now, you can... If you can actually re-download your music, it's off the record. It's an internal policy. So if you go and ask them, they may not say this, but users are allowed until April, you were allowed up to 3 of these one-time exemptions to re-download your music. Now you get 1 one-time exemption. And I did get an email from a number of people who said, yeah, I called Apple or wrote to Apple and they put all of my, one guy said the thing to say is that when you were transferring to your new Mac and something went wrong and all of your iTunes songs were lost, he said they flipped a switch and they were all available for download from iTunes. Now, this fella says one of the reasons iTunes doesn't want to do this, Apple doesn't want to do this, is they pay the record label for every file that's downloaded, regardless of whether it's a re-download.
Wow.
So it's actually costing them money.
Excuse me one second. Apple, this is Merlin Mann, and I would like to get all my music.
Download all my music? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I got all kinds of traction with those guys, believe me. But no, I think that I've said this before, but obviously if it's the record labels that are driving that deal with that particular piece of the deal, then we're SOL. But, I think this is something that would be a terrific feature for them to offer,
Audible does.
Hey, if you're, almost like, oh gosh, dare I say, back in the days on mp3.com when you could basically, emulate your collection wherever you were. I mean, to me, that's powerful to be able to say, let's say I bought a new Mac and I'm in a hotel room. I want to be able to download this record I bought one time.
Right.
That, I mean, the thing is that, to get into the, I'm allowed to say this once a month, the long tail. I mean, they've got all this stuff sitting around on a server somewhere. It's just a question of verifying that you're the right owner
well,
of it.
Well, and that's the case. At Audible, I have an Audible library of these are spoken word books, and I can download anything I've ever bought, ever. It's all there. Anytime, anywhere, as long as that computer is authorized. That's a great way to do
like
it.
It may seem like a subtle difference, but I think that's a huge difference. If they were to say, we're going to be your locker in perpetuity. You've got the rights to this until you're in the ground, and we're going to hang on to it whenever you need it. Just come grab it. Grab it as much as you want. Who cares? It's your library.
I don't think that has anything to do with anything. I mean, anything to do with Apple, and has everything to do with with the record companies.
Well, that's what this guy's saying. I mean, I think Apple would like to do that, but the record companies actually make them pay for each download.
I used to go out with a girl whose sister worked at the Limited, and she told me the dirty little secret of most of the stores in the malls, at least in the mid-80s, which was, you know, they made these really crap clothes that would completely fall apart, and they had 100% guarantee. So people would always come back and bring back their clothes, but they always, whenever they came back and did exchanges, they always bought more stuff.
Right.
And so what does this do? I mean, if they can find out a way to work that out, you just get people in the habit of coming back and downloading stuff from Apple, which is like exactly the behavior that you want to habituate in people.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, pie in the sky.
I think we're all agreed Apple would like to do this.
I definitely think so. I think at this point they're lucky that I always feel like they're lucky they can sell music online, you know, if it was
And by
RIA.
The way, Apple does listen, because I got an email from iTunes customer experience saying, "Oh, you don't have to wait till December to reauthorize. All your computers will be glad to help." So. But I would never take advantage of my connections as Netcaster of the Year.
Yeah, all we need to do is channel your email account through all of our email accounts, Leo, and then we'd all be having things. You know what I mean?
I am Leo of LeoCast. I have to Please say, make my library work.
You know, I get a lot of email from listeners to the various podcasts, but I get the most interesting and nicest email from listeners to this podcast. And a lot of them are in Apple. I mean, it's great, and we appreciate your listening. We're glad you listen. And by the way, if you have a story for us or suggestion, something you'd like us to see for future shows, Merlin set up, I think, a clever way to do this. All you have to do is, if you're a Delicious user, and I know a lot of you are, did you see the...
It's Delicious.
Michael Arrington's post that Delicious is something like 5 million users now?
I think it's 1 million. I think they broke 1 million.
They broke one? No.
1 million.
I'll have to look. But they went up quite a bit ever since their Yahoo acquisition. In any event, if you have a Delicious account, all you need to do is tag it MBW Ideas, MacBreak Weekly, MBW Ideas, and we will be able to see those, and we can add that to our list of things to talk about. We're not using the four tag, because although we have a Delicious account, I think it's just easier to use the tag. Because there is, you could, correct me, Merlin, you're the Delicious expert. You can do something for MBW Ideas as well.
Yeah, the nice thing about the four tag, I mean, there's all kinds of little neat things you can do on Delicious like this. The nice thing about the four tag, or the bad thing, I guess, depending on how you look at it, is that only that person will see it. So, for example, I mean, I have requested repeatedly, begging, please don't email me links, please.
Right,
make
right.
them 4:43 folders.
But then it's private to you.
It's private to me. Now, I mean, you know, that's why I like this little kind of ad hoc tagging way. I like the idea. I mean, we talked about a whole bunch of different ideas for getting listeners to MacBreak more involved in the stories that we're going to do, you know, before and after the show. But for now, I mean, I think this is a good first step. Makes it easy for people to hop in and say, hey, you know, go check this out. And we do. We absolutely see them all. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yeah. And if you want to see the tags that people are sending us, you can just do
subscribe.
Go to delicious.com/tag/MBW Ideas. So that's what your point is that it is, in fact, open.
That's right.
To anybody who
That's
wants
right. And
to
you can see,
it.
So you know, get a good idea of the stuff that I'm nicking off a dig to talk about for the next episode.
That's pretty much what we're
But on. I do credit.
Well, that's good. I just want to, you know, it was on Dig, I guess. It was a TechCrunch post about the new site, about how big Delicious had gotten. Yeah, I guess you're right. It was 900,000 new subscribers in the 5 months since Yahoo bought them, something like that.
Yeah, I think they just broke 1 million.
Okay. I'd love to see the curve, though, on the number of people, number of posts versus, you know, how many times that person has posted and so on. I bet that's I'm not going to use that word. I've already used it for the month. But I bet it's way past 80-20 in terms of the number of people.
Are you talking about Dig or Delicious?
I was thinking of Delicious. Just the number, like, just to see the curve of the number of total entries from the total number of users. Because I bet there's a pretty small group
that does most of it.
An outsized amount of the actual
person. I think Delicious is not as easy to use. It's not as transparent. It's a little opaque. Like a lot of the things that you tell me about, Merlin, until you tell me about them, I know about them, but I don't get how useful they are. And then you have a knack, and that's one of the things I like about your blog about 43 folders, is you have a knack of saying, oh, no, well, see what you can do with this, and sewing it into. You're the king of spackle. You sew
I would love to become the king of spackle. That would finally get me a little bit of lumber over in Cupertino. You know, another nice thing, I'll just toss this out real quick, something that I've started using is something called OnlyWired, onlywired.com, one word. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but it lets you set up, if you have multiple bookmarking services, like say you like to use Magnolia as well as Delicious, any of the other popular bookmarking sites, you basically enter all your login data for all of those, and you get one bookmarklet to rule them all. So just something to know about if you're
I need that.
I need to be able to do that to multiple Delicious.
Well, do you want the hack? You want to hear the hack for that?
Yes.
Here's the hack for that. Set that up with, so let's say you've got Alex One account. Set up your Alex One account using OnlyWire, and then log out of Delicious and set up your Alex Two account using regular Delicious, because it's the API that handles the Delicious login for OnlyWire, and therefore you basically have access into two different bookmarklets.
So you'd have two bookmarklets, and both of them would, but both of them
would
end
up
in Delicious.
That's how I do my Berlin Man stuff versus my 43.
That's my big problem with Delicious. I would like to have multiple accounts with Delicious.
That's my biggest problem too.
I had to move my stuff over. I mean, because and actually this is something that they're supposedly working on, is the ability to pull out via, this is so not about Macs, but the ability to pull out. So my problem was I didn't have an easy way to present the links on my site for just one tag, which in my case was 43 folders. And I think it's something they're working on. We can get a little bit more granularity. You know, wouldn't it be great to be able to say, show me everything that's, you know, Leo Laporte plus MacBreak,
right,
out of a feed. So I think that's
something
they're working on. You can't do it. You can't pull it into, to my knowledge, you cannot pull that into a daily post easily. You can, I've wangled it using FeedBurner and a little bit of spit and bailing wire, but I don't think it's an official canonical trick.
MacBook?
I have a request.
Yes.
I want to know if there's any of these sites that will allow me to put in all my grocery store numbers so that when I go, I can just give one number and still get my checkout stuff.
Kind of. There's a site you can go to that will let you create one. Why are you
like this? A setup.
There's a site you can go to. I think I got this off of Lifehacker or maybe Boing Boing, but you can go in and enter in or scan, I guess, all the barcodes for all of your grocery stores and generate one code that you can put on a card to take with you everywhere.
And then
I knew he'd have the answer, Leo.
That makes sense. So you just have one card that, with all these little stripes on it, and you say, scan the third one down, please.
And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to a tattoo parlor and have that put on my forehead.
Yeah.
That is hot.
Or I just get a chip.
Mine is mostly Safeway.com.
How long before Safeway gives you a little implant in your arm so you just walk right through the store, right?
I got an RS-232 port in the back of my neck.
I know a lot of people who like to swap their Safeway cards with each other. Every month or two, they'll swap Safeway cards.
Oh, they're card swappers.
You still get the discount, but you kind of get all of a sudden he's buying so many diapers. Diapers and whiskey. This is confusing.
That's a good idea. Now, I love that kind of stuff because that's really, what do they call it? Monkey wrenching. I love
culture jamming.
Culture jamming. It's just a great idea. Should we talk about the fact that I hate to, you know, one of the pitfalls of a show like this is you end up doing a lot of rumor stuff. And most of this stuff, as we know, having covered this for so long, is bogus. But here's another rumor. Apple planning to update the MacBook and Mac Pro lines in time for the holiday shopping season. This is according to Apple Insider. Core 2 Duo in the 13-inch MacBook, the 15-inch Pro, and the 17-inch MacBook. I guess that's the only thing you could do.
Maybe. And Leo, we're going to figure out if this is true based on your purchasing decisions.
Yeah, I bought a MacBook, so it's probably true. I'm screwed.
Yeah. And if you bought one, then I'm putting in my order for the new one.
You know what? I'm loving my Mac Pro.
Yeah?
Oh.
So aren't you glad I told you to get one?
Beautiful. I'll tell you one thing. Beautiful design. Go to the Apple Store and just open it up. You know, it's got the same latch as the old G5 case. It's pretty much the same case until you open it up and look inside. And there's all this room, first of all, because you don't need so much cooling. And then, there's four or five, I think five drive bays. I added a drive today. You don't need a cable. You don't need screws. You don't need anything. I got a bare drive. You flip the latch. The same latch that opens the hatch also unlocks these slide-out drawers. The first drawer is the drive it came with. I slid that out. I got a Western Digital Raptor because I'm a fan of these 10,000 RPM drives. Slid the Raptor. You know, it has a bracket, thumb screws. You screw the Raptor drive in. You don't need a cables because when you slide it in, it connects with the SATA cable and the power cable. Just boom, like that. Moved the other one over. It was the easiest drive upgrade I've ever made. I mean, just mind blowing. And the machine is very, very fast. Beautiful, beautiful machine.
Did you get the 1900 card, Leo?
I did.
And how much noise does the card itself make?
Well, it's got a big old fan and a big old heat sink, but you know, it's much quieter than the Dual G5. I mean, that was a very noisy machine. This runs much cooler and much quieter.
Well, you know where I'm going with this.
You want to put it in your studio?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that something that would be doable?
I think so. You know, it's running right now. You don't hear it.
I have to admit, I'm just about to invest in one of those isolators for
the box to put it in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they make them somewhere actually not too far away from here.
You know, these Heil mics I use are pretty directional. I get more noise from the fact that it's a warm day in Petaluma and I've got the windows open. You probably hear cars going by, trucks going by. Then you hear the machine. The machine's quiet. And let me tell you, World of Warcraft on a 30-inch monitor.
It's awesome.
It's just awesome. In fact, frankly, I haven't been paying attention to a word you guys have been saying. And then I put Doom on here. You know, you turn and you turn everything up all the way. Finally, I've never been able to do that on a Mac. Anti-aliasing, everything, all the way up. And the thing is, 1600 by 1200, just gorgeous. Just gorgeous. World of Warcraft actually runs at the native resolution of the monitor, which is kind of an outrageous resolution. It's very realistic. I feel like it's my new home. I am an undead priest. Do not mess with me.
What level? What level?
Oh, I'm only a level 19. I'm such a wimp.
You just got to hire someone in India. They'll bring it right up.
I know. I need somebody to level me up.
Yeah.
Who's going to level me up? But then then you get there, you're level 60, and you didn't go through all the trouble and trial and work to get there. It's kind of like, you know, hitting Nirvana without going through all the lives, you know, you're just not ready for it, you know?
It's like, you know, rolling your characters and then starting out at the ninth level, dude.
Can't
That's
do
just
it.
Cheating.
Can't yeah. do it. Can't do it.
Yeah, but I've gotten to level 67 in Pac-Man, so there.
You know, in level 40, you get a steed. Oh, no, that's another game. Anything else? You know, we did last week, and I thought it was really fun. I didn't warn you ahead of time, Alex, that we were going to do it, but we asked everybody for a tip or a program they're using or something they like a lot. I've kind of just done mine, which is my new love of my life, which is the Mac Pro. Who wants to start us off? Any recommendations?
I got mine.
What's that, Scott?
I'm going to stick with iTunes again this week. I gave a tip last week for the new iTunes, and I'm going to give another one that I once again stumbled on, and it's intuitive. It's something you would probably expect, but I just found it by accident. I think it's really cool. You can use the scroll wheel on your Mighty Mouse, or for that matter, any other mouse, to page through your album art in cover flow. And you have to go in and adjust your scroll speed if you want to be able to slow it down to one album at a time. But what was really cool is one of my buddies got a vertical mouse, has a vertical scroll wheel, and even though cover flow is a horizontal experience, the vertical mouse works, and you can scroll through all your stuff really cool. And while you're playing Warcraft, Leo, I'm spending hour upon hour just gazing at my cover flow thing as it whizzes by me.
It's unclear who's actually wasting more time at this point.
Yeah, but it's very cool. You can use your little Mighty Mouse, and I got the new wireless one, which works very well, and I can just scroll through. So just try your scroll wheel to look at your cover flow art.
I like it, and I do. I have to say, cover flow, I hadn't used cover flow until iTunes 7, and it's a great application. They did a nice job of integrating that. Merlin, what are you using, doing, and liking these days?
Well, I used to be embarrassed to talk about this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I love an application called Pizzizz.
I'm embarrassed.
You're embarrassed.
Just hearing you say it embarrasses me.
You know, you guys can be very unkind.
Is that Pazuzu?
It's not.
I need a young priest and an old priest.
More about Pazuzu. No, Pazuzu is, I've talked about this on the site. It's a terrific little application that does the seemingly dorktastic task of helping you take a nap. It lets you, so if you're like me and you go to, you know what?
How do you spell Pazuzu?
P-Z-I-Z-Z. And let me finish the thought, because here's the problem. If you're like me and you lay down, all of a sudden you wake up, all things considered's on, and you haven't done any work all day.
Right.
So Pizzizz is this terrific program. It costs, but what you do is you get this great little program, and you say, okay, I want to take a nap of this length. I want the little helpful new age voice to be this loud, and I want the little music to be this loud. And it generates a custom nap of exactly the amount of time that you want. Now, for me, 20 minutes.
Wait a minute. You're saying you use software to generate custom naps?
Okay, now here's, look, you might want to go ahead and put in an order for Crow, because I know how you enjoy that.
Can I have a deep fried tonight?
Tonight, when we get off, I'm going to send you a 20-minute
pizzazz.
Nap.
Okay. MP3, you can send people naps?
That's why I need to finish the thought.
Sorry.
No, it's totally dorky until you try it. And then you go, you know what? A 20-minute nap, like, completely changes my day. And so what this does is it walks you through this very simple, like, you know, you go to sleep. You're like, oh, this is so stupid. I'm never going to fall asleep. You're totally asleep. And then it gently wakes you up. And then just in case you miss it, there's an incredibly annoying buzzer at the end. But I think there's some growing research from what I can gather about the benefits of taking a nap in the middle of the day. And if you don't want to risk, you know, losing your job because you're, you know, asleep for 4 hours, this is a great way to take from 10 minutes to 60 minutes, you can take this really blitz of a nap. And they have a free demo you can try.
I'm confused about the pricing. So the Pizzazz software and the Energizer plugin is $40. Do you need to then spend $20 on the sleep plugin?
See, this is why they should hire, like, I don't know, Adaptive Path or somebody to explain this. The Energizer plugin lets you take what's called an Energizer nap. I can't believe I'm talking about this.
Okay.
It sounds dorky, but it's not. No, the Energizer, that's an Energizer nap. That's where you grab
it. But the Energizer is a kind of nap.
That's right. The sleep module is to, like, help you get to sleep at night. So if you're in a hotel room, help you.
And what happens when it's pizzazzing?
When it's pizzazzing, it goes through a series of, and I think it's incorporating, I don't know all the scientific details.
It's on your iPod, we should mention.
So it can be. It starts out, here's the cool part, it starts out as an application on your Mac, but then you can generate as an AAC or as an MP3 any of the naps that you've generated and put them on your iPod. And every one is different. So each one you generate has slight differences to it. I'd recommend just before you completely scoff, and I do understand, like everything on 43 folders, I understand the scoffing, but have a look and try it. And I'll send you a demo nap tonight.
Hey, Leo, I'm going to send you a link to Radio Shack's website where for $2 you can buy an alarm clock.
You know, somebody sent me
man,
a Buddhist
spot.
Alarm. No, somebody sent me a Buddhist meditation thing.
Those awesome? Is it the one with all dong?
Yeah, it's like a little box. It has its own speaker. You could plug it into a speaker system, and it's got it was all in Chinese. I don't know what it does, except that you flip switches and all of a sudden it makes sounds and you get very meditative and relaxed. So this must be a hardware.
But it doesn't do a meditative wake up.
I don't know. I haven't gone through the whole process. I just have this box. I don't know where it came from. Nobody labeled it or anything. It just arrived on my doorstep.
They have these alarm clocks that that will do typically
it's
when
not
you come
a clock.
Out of it.
It looks like it's just like a green thing with a speaker. There's no readout or anything.
No, I mean,
this sounds kind of scary, Leo.
I mean,
you
might
find out where that came from.
I know. There was no return address.
No, but you might have become some kind of a zombie killer and not know it.
Linda Wertheimer.
So, Leo, when you're giving
What?
When you're giving your acceptance speech Friday night, don't be surprised if you hear your mouth say, "Scott Bourne, come up and accept this with me."
I would be nothing if it weren't for Scott Bourne. We're all net radio. Thank you.
My little minions have sent these little green modules to people all over the world.
Oh, that's where it came from.
So anyway, it's PZIZZ.com, and your mileage may vary, but it's worth looking at.
Dateline, IP Clinic, Marin County, California. Researchers announced today the results of a 25-year study on the effects of napping in industrial and post-industrial nations. The study's outcome was clear. For 92.5% of workers, an afternoon nap increases their productivity, their creativity, and their problem-solving skill.
That's right, Leo. These people enjoy more vim, vigor, and vitality every day with naps.
You guys realize they probably are going to take this and turn it into a spa.
NASA states an afternoon nap increases productivity by 35% and decision-making ability by up to 50%.
Scientist says, I was sleepy and then I wasn't.
I wake up and I feel better. I am awake.
Now here's Guy Lamono.
Okay. That actually is from the Pizzazz website.
Pizzazz? You think?
So you know it's true.
Yeah, right. Pizzazz is a personal life.
You guys laugh.
Coaching
you
system.
Guys have all the fun you want. Your little small world collapsing on itself. But just try it.
I have to say, I really want one that does like a Zen wake up, which is like if you're doing Zen meditation.
Yeah, the bomb. I love
you
the
get
bomb.
This, what it
wakes
does
you
it
up
does.
By not waking you up.
No. It's not just that it bongs. It slowly pulls you out of it. So what will happen is that when you're coming out of meditation, if you're not careful, if you don't have an alarm clock and you're good at it, you can stay a minute. You think you'll be there for 45 minutes and you're there for 4 hours and you can't move your legs. And
can we say bong on this radio?
Yeah.
There's a meditation timer. I'll check it out on Mac Update right now, but I'm pretty sure there's a software meditation timer.
Because what it'll do is it'll go dong 7 minutes before you finish, and then it'll do it. It'll cut the time in half in 3.5 minutes, and then cut it in half and cut it in half and cut it in half. And so what you end up with is kind of this dong, and then right at the very end it's like dong 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 dong. And that's how they. I mean, if you're at a Zen, we have lots of Zen centers here in San Francisco, so it's easy to find. But that's what it would. It's a represent, you know, it's a recreation of that, which would be kind of cool.
Wow.
So I'll have to look. I'm interested to see if it's there.
Go hit Mac Update for a meditation timer. It's version.
See, I was going to build one with water. So I was like a weekend project for me. Like a big, you know, you fill it up with a certain amount of water and it makes all these little things turn around and hits the little thing just in time. And
wow.
Anyway, I've anyway.
Wow, this show is really falling apart here.
I had my cool thing.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yes. Okay, so,
okay,
so
I got iTunes,
CoverFlow, Pizzizz, and now Alex. Yes.
I got two, but they're short.
Yes.
Okay, so the first one is the one that I really like is PodTube. So, you know, you see something funny on YouTube, and you want to put it on your iPod.
Yes.
All you have to do is you have to have Safari. It doesn't work with Firefox, but if it's open in the Safari window and you run PodTube, you should just go get it, and it literally downloads it from YouTube, converts it to iPod legal video, and throws it into iTunes.
Is it free? That's a fantastic.
You know, I don't know if it's free or not, but it hasn't asked me to pay yet. I haven't paid for it, so yet.
TubeSock does that, but it's demo ware. I don't think it's free.
Yeah, but PodTube.
I use TubeSock. It works well.
TubeSock works great.
So both of those are great, because you don't want to go to the website every single time you want to watch that stuff. And then the other one that I've just gotten into, and you guys have been the victims of for this show, is WebStractor, which I kind of
Oh, is that how you did this?
Does that work for a Mac?
Yeah. It runs on a Mac. And so what WebStractor does is you can just surf. So what happened, what I did is I went to
In the careful preparations for this episode.
I did. So I hit Mac. I just went to the Delicious list.
Oh, and you just downsucked
it. I just pushed everything into WebStractor. So I literally went to Delicious from within WebStractor, and then I just clicked on all of them really quickly, and it loads them all up. And then I say, okay, I want to edit them. After I go out of browsing, I have them all. They're all those pages that I just looked at are all loaded into WebStractor, and then say, okay, I want to edit them. And what I did, people can't see this, but I cut out all the headers and all the ads and everything else, just so we can look at it. You know, so I just eliminated everything that I need to. So if you're doing research, it's great because you don't have, you can get rid of all the clutter because you can actually edit the pages and then export the whole list of pages. You can organize them. There's like a cool table of contents at the beginning. I didn't do any of that stuff. I just hit table of contents and it just made it for me. And so anyway, I thought it's one of those things that I've had sitting around for a while and I just started to really dig into it. And it's actually pretty nifty. I still don't know how to.
Did you buy it?
I bought one a long time ago, and then I got them to send me another one.
You're stuttering, Alex.
It's a little pricey.
How much is it?
WebStractor 1.6. It's $80.
Yeah, no, I paid $80 once before.
No, I bought a car in 1954, so I can use my neighbors anytime I want.
The license up to the mic now.
Yeah, no, I called them and they sent me one. You know, so but the, but I did pay for it. I did pay for it in a former life, and but the.
I didn't mean it that way. I just meant.
Yeah,
the price.
I see how it is.
That's, a lot to spend. But Pizzizz is only $40.
No, these are cheap. But the thing is if you're doing a lot of research, and we do a lot of that stuff here, where you want to just clip all the stuff.
It looks awesome.
Out.
No,
you want to
really
have the website. You want to have the web page, but what you don't want is all the other crap that goes around.
Do you use Devin for that kind of thing, Merlin?
Yeah, I do. It's funny. I run kind of hot and cold with DevonThink, but I conceptually, it's really. The bottom line is, if it had tags, it would be like the best thing in the world for me. But as it is, it's still really useful. It's just you still kind of have. So for people who don't know, it's kind of similar to like the Yojimbo or any of those things where you kind of point it at information and it sucks it all into this big soup. And I'm not really doing it service here, but it's an easy way to take a huge amount of information, put it into this one unified system. and then be able to search against it. And it's not really smart.
It's not exactly the same as WebStractor because you don't get this document.
Oh, gosh, no, no.
It's but a notebook.
But what it's, the thing that it's good at, and I suspect most people probably don't use it to its full potential, is in finding semantic relationships between documents that you kind of weren't aware of. So it looks for keyword frequency and all kinds of, you know.
It's pretty smart. I mean, it's kind of an interesting program. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, it's the costly application show. It's not free, but boy, it's pretty powerful. Especially I got excited about it a few years ago, and then I read a piece Stephen Johnson did on his blog about how he uses it to put his books and articles together. And for somebody who does a lot of research, it's you can basically come up with Quicksilver keys or services keys to send, you know, to just basically say send this current page, you know, to DevonThink. And it sucks everything down, including the images. So it's pretty cool.
I have something you might be a little interested in as my little tip. I know you're an IMAP user. You use Fastmail, as do I. And there's a problem with IMAP servers because Apple Mail doesn't handle idle properly. And so actually Apple Mail doesn't update properly. And a good IMAP server will actually say, hey, I've got some new mail, and push it to the client, to mail. IMAP Idle. Have you seen this? It's a really neat plugin. A fella's written a simple email, a simple Apple Mail plugin called IMAP Idle. I'll put a link in the show notes that plugs into Apple Mail. It's very early days. I mean, he's apparently just got it working, but it works great for me. I put it in, and no longer do I have to poll my IMAP server. It actually pushes the new mail to me automatically.
I love it.
Yeah, simple little thing, but a very kind of a neat thing to have if you use Apple Mail and a IMAP server. And that is it. We are out of time. I have asked for a demo copy of Pazzizz, and with any luck, as this show winds down, do you think I can play a little bit of the Pazzizz nap?
Yes, I think you should.
Okay,
for
now
time
if you're driving, please keep your eyes open at this point. And do you want to send me a nap, or should I?
I think that this is, people wouldn't mind me sending you a 20-minute MP3.
I won't play the whole nap. It's a short. We just play a few seconds.
I'll tell you what, this conversation will do the trick right now.
If you're not asleep yet.
If this ain't put you to sleep, we'll get you something that will.
Okay, so send me a little. A nap, Merlin.
We can pretend like you're playing it right now.
I am playing it right now. Because
oh, there it is.
Through the magic of time shifting, this is Merlin's nap. Merlin, it's time for All Things Considered. Time to wake up, Merlin. Linda Wertheimer's calling.
Daniel Shore.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next Tuesday on... I should plug everybody. MerlinMan43folders.com. Scott Bourne at iLifeZone and podcast at tricks.com. Is it podcastingtricks.com?
One of these weeks, you'll get it right. Podcastingtricks.com.
There's an ing.
You're full of beans, dude.
He's mad. It's because of the Thurston Howell impression last week. And, of course, Pixel Core is where Alex Lindsay hails from. He's the master really behind this show, a Mac Break. And actually, we're going to
we're adding more shows.
A couple of new shows. Inside the Black Box?
We have actually two new shows that are going to be coming up. And we have a couple of the episodes out, but we really just think that it really fits inside of what with the Twit and stuff. And that is the VFX show, which is a discussion between me and some other guys that are pretty deep into visual effects, and we just look at movies.
I love it.
And so we just go watch a movie, and then we talk about it. It's kind of like any of these shows, but just talking about the visual effects. We don't really care about whether the movie was actually
good
or not.
Should people as homework watch the movie first and then listen to the show?
Yeah, because we don't worry about spoiling it. So like this week we're going to be talking about Flyboys, which had great effects, and you should.
It flopped like instantly. I didn't even know
it was bad. But the effects were really cool, and so that's what we'll talk about. And
the trailer was amazing for that show.
It was one of the more beautiful beautiful movies that I've seen.
I thought it was good.
It disappeared. It didn't last for. I mean,
I went and saw it Saturday. It's great.
Is it out now?
Sappy. Yeah,
is this the World War I movie?
Yeah, I agree it's sappy, but I have to admit that I was mostly there because of the special effects, and I got to tell you, it's some of the best flight photography.
Yeah.
I have ever seen.
Yeah, no, it was really good in that respect.
So is that one not up yet?
That one's not up. It will be up by the end of tomorrow. Actually, I'm actually starting to record it in 10 minutes. So, and then the other show is called Inside the Black Box, and this has actually been something we've been testing on and off for years. And this is really showing you how visual effects get done, but really aimed at a simpler version. So we're really showing you kind of the basics of how mats get created, and how we have actually one up there with one of the stunt guys from Pirates of the Caribbean talking about how you beat yourself up, you know, without being actually touched.
So that's coming soon to the, without being
that
touched.
Should be,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm very good at beating myself up without being touched, actually. So that's something I really don't need, but I'll listen to it anyway.
Anyway, it should be fun.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, please do not attempt to close your eyes if you're driving an automobile. But if you are at home,
while you're preparing to rest deeply,
you may begin your nap now.
It's a good idea to ensure that you'll not be disturbed.
This is not a joke.
Be as comfortable as
send Merlin a Sonos.
Reach into your wallet.
So that it's easy for you to let go of the events of the day so far.
Let go of that dollar bill.
That you'll get as much benefit as possible from
if you send us money.
Is that guy really talking?
I'll offer you some advice for just a little while.
Be the rock.
Why not just let yourself drift off?
See the rock.
Good night, everybody.
Wax on, wax on.
At any time, you can make my voice fade into the background.
Okay.
Gently relaxing your attention.
Good idea.
It's most comfortable.
You guys are all dead.